I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hi, welcome to Amazing FBA. This is your host, Michael Veazey speaking, and this podcast episode is brought to you by Reliable Income, led by Adam Hudson. Reliable Income is an Amazon community and course, and Adam Hudson is an Amazon seller. He's doing well over seven figures a year now, and also a very straightforward Australian. And in a sea of hypey Americans, that is quite a refreshing change. Adam will tell you it straight when it comes to how much money you need to private label, which is measured in the thousands of dollars these days, not hundreds, and how long it takes to really get a private label product off the ground when you're working alongside the day job, which again is measured in months rather than weeks. Now, alongside that, Adam, however, is a very, very positive guy, and he has a lot to offer in terms of getting a really great positioning on Amazon for your product. So high quality products selling at a really good price and keeping the competition at bay, which it's never been a smarter time to adopt that strategy than in 2018 when Me Too or Cheap are just going to be trashed by the Amazon crowd or have their price disappear into the floor overnight. So I really, really think his approach is sustainable. Hence, I think that Reliable Income is a very good word for his type of training. If you want to find out more about Adam, as I said, amazingfba.com/Adam. If you want to find out more about his training and or take the four-part video training course, which is free, go to amazingfba.com/reliable, R-E-L-I-A-B-L-E. Just for more transparency, I am an affiliate of that. So that will buy more than a coffee, as is the traditional about affiliate sales, but what it will do is help cover some of the costs of running the podcast, which hopefully benefits you, some of the software that I have to use to keep in touch with the guests, and my beloved and long-suffering editor Daniel, who is worth his weight in gold, but I have got to pay him because even editors have to eat as well, so I've got to pay for blogging, podcast hosting, the rest of it. So that helps to cover some of my costs there, and I hope you'll check that out. Now on with the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. Today, I've got a very important guest on, and that is to deal with the area of product research, as it's commonly called, or market research, as I prefer to call it. There's no getting around the fact that even if you're a newbie seller or a very experienced person who's about to launch a new product line, there's no way you can get away with this. You need to find out what you should be selling and all the whys and wherefores of demand and supply and all the other questions. So today, I have Reid Mentor of the Asmazo software company, hope I said that correctly, and he's a very experienced seller who has recently developed a product in-house to solve his own problems and then realized that loads of other people could benefit from it, which is always the best way to develop anything, really scratch your own itch. So Reid, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show, and thanks for that great intro.
You're welcome. So to follow up on the intro, this is the usual, very boringly predictable question, but very, very important one. Just tell us a bit about yourself. What's your background, you know, as an Amazon seller, and how did you come to create these softwares?
Sure. Well, in a former life, I worked in the oil patch of Alberta, Canada. And so I spent a lot of time away from home and away from my family and stuff. And there came a point, you know, after 20 years of doing that, where I had to tell myself, hey, this isn't going any further. It was a great job, paid very well, but you know, you have to spend time with your children. So I spent the first year still working in the oil patch, and I had previously done small things on the internet, but then I heard about Amazon and I thought, well, you know, let's check this out. And it was something that I could do on the road in camp, you know, with the limited internet speeds and stuff there. So I really concentrated on it for a year, and then that was leading into late 2014 or early 2015, where I finally said, that's it, I'm gonna drop it all and I'm going to go into Amazon. And that turned into a full-time job. Now, a lot of people will wait until they reach a certain point, price point, and how much they make per month before they actually leave their job. And I would obviously recommend anyone to do their finances. But for me, I was obviously pretty lucky. I had that time where I could just drop it all, even though I wasn't selling a whole bunch at that first bit. But you know, moving into full time for me It really gave me a chance to concentrate on the business. And leading up to the end of 2016, things just really steamrolled from there. And at that point, you know, it was all pretty self-sufficient. I'm a pretty big believer in standard operating procedure. So everything we do has a procedure. There's a way to do things. And if you have to hire it out, you don't spend all day training people. You can just hand them a file across the world and they should know how to do it. So that's really sort of how I scaled, in a nutshell, how I scaled my business, Amazon selling business, into that. And we started out with RA, really early on just to learn the ropes. And then we moved quickly into private label.
Interesting. So not only a Canadian voice, I think you're the first Canadian we've had on, at least I presume you're Canadian. I'm assuming that from the fact that you worked in Canada, but
yeah,
I may be making a grave mistake. But the other thing is that you have quite a unique background with the oil business there. And when you say the oil patch, did you call it oil field? What sort of job did you have in that? Just to give us a bit of a flavor before we plunge into Amazon things.
I was a government inspector. So you've heard of the tar sands or the oil sands. I was the guy that went around to them and made sure the things they were building didn't blow up. So I certified them.
Excellent.
And now I've blown up.
Good success. Well, let's tell ourselves that your job, you know, had an intrinsic part in that. That's good. So obviously, yeah, that's interesting because I always think that where people come from is bound to have an influence on how they approach things. And my background's a musician, as some people know. And, you know, so therefore I suppose I'm more of a people person and a communicator than a product and, you know, a software guy in some ways. Although a lot of musicians did go on back in the day to be computer programmers actually, but there's a certain nerdy sort of element to music. But so with you, the oil background, obviously quite interesting. I guess that if you had to come up with standard ways that oil, complex oil machinery and mechanisms generally would be safe, then I guess you were very used to being very, very structured. So it sounds like you brought that way of thinking across to Amazon. Is that a fair summary?
Absolutely. 100%. We dealt solely with standard operating procedures and you had to follow those. If you didn't follow them, bad things would happen. So that is the bulk of what I was able to bring. Also being able to talk to suppliers and stuff like that really, really helps when you're wheeling and dealing with folks. But I will tell you, you know, I made a lot of mistakes when I started out this business, and there is no getting around that. There were huge mistakes made and they were at scale, especially when I was scaling, you know. So you live, you learn. I think one of my main goals now is if I'm talking to other sellers and stuff is to really try and mitigate those initial issues that we ran into. And that's a lot of why we started up our software program company with the different programs is we were using those in-house, but they were mostly on Excel spreadsheets. The ideas were there, the mechanics were there. We just didn't put it into a package that was pretty for the consumer. And so we were able to do that. And we take a different approach with our softwares than a lot on the market for the simple fact that, you know, a lot of these types of programs are made or built by a developer. You know, that's something that they brought in. Maybe they sold a little bit on Amazon and they have decided that we can now, since I know how to develop, let's develop something. And a lot of these programs are great, but you have to understand in this business, you have to have a real solid background, fundamental knowledge of how Amazon works. If you don't know that, then basically you're just using numbers that you don't know where they came from.
Okay, great. So that's a solid background for you as an Amazon seller and why you use software. I just want to get the dirt on what this big mistake was or mistakes were that you made and how that relates to your thinking these days about the data and data-driven, you know, research.
Right. Well, okay. So one of the largest mistakes that we made was we decided that we were going to go outside of Amazon. So we bought display cases and we bought promotional material and we wanted to go to these different, in this case, it was independent drugstores. And we thought that we were going to be able to just walk into these places and we had the data to confirm that these places were selling enough product to make it worth our while. Prior to even going to one pharmacy, and I keep saying we, it was me. And I went out and I got all these, I got $10,000 in display cases and promotional material and stuff like that. And now it sounds, you know, that's something that we would do again. But at the time, it was a drain on our cash flow quite a bit. And it set us back quite a bit. And we literally do not have one product in one drugstore at this moment. It did not work. So had I looked at the data, had I taken the time to actually go out and talk to these people and say, hey, you know, what is the way that we can get in and really make an impact on your business? They would have told me you can't because your competition's too big and they're giving us a great price and there's no way you can match it.
Excellent. Well, that's some very salutary lessons that you learned there. And I like the fact that just talking to a couple of people would have just saved you tens of, you know, at least $10,000 or, you know, and presumably months and months of work. That's a lot of, you know, people to contact presumably as well. And yeah, there's something about conversations with the people you're aiming to reach that is really important that a lot of people skip. And I think that's true of conversations with your potential market. I mean, we don't have to be obsessed with numbers. And I would say that get out of the gate, as they say in the States. But yeah, also the importance of some solid data behind you as well. And competition is another key word that we've got to explore. So Reid, let's get back to the question of how you can successfully launch on Amazon. So obviously one of the don't do's is your story, which is always interesting, I think, to learn from what people have done. That is a bit of a car crash. We've all had them. Yeah. So what's the first thing you would do if you're starting off? Because I know you do some coaching with some sellers as well. And if you're sitting down with somebody and they say, okay, I want to sell a product on Amazon, what's the first thing you would do? Would you say, okay, you can go and use this cool software, put in your criteria? Would you start with the criteria like it needs to sell 300 units a month and it needs to sell between $20 and $40 and it weighs less than a pound or something like that? Or would you have a different starting point?
So me personally, when I'm talking to clients, I try and stay away from the competition as much as possible. So I will guide them to look around, find something that really, it's one thing to be the first person on the platform to sell something because, you know, 90% of out of the box thinkers kind of fail. You know, there's 10% of people who bring a brand new product onto the market and they make it, but they also have the backing of, once again, you know, great business practices and stuff like that. So I'm in an area where maybe there's two or three that have tried it out and something where I can get data on that actual product. And at that point, then I'll say, hey, maybe we can change it and really look at how we can differentiate from these people who are already selling fairly well and beat them to market. And I do a lot of that by going on Kickstarter. I go on these other places where I'm looking for products that I know I can make better. And since I'm experienced in the manufacturing of physical products, I can beat those guys to market every single time. Now, it's not so much for a newer seller that they would be able to maybe do that, but with some help, they could do that, you know, and there's lots of inexpensive help out there for people. And that's a general statement there for inexpensive, you know, to someone starting out, you know, $100, $200, that's a lot of money to them. So, you know, keep that in mind, but there are people out there that will source these things for you and they'll get you a great deal on their end. And you just beat those people to the market and you slam on that marketing machine and you roll with it. But okay, once again, you want the data. So it's important to get those, take your time, you know, don't in 2 weeks decide this is our product. You know, you have to take a look at the numbers and make sure that they make sense for you.
Okay, so you're suggesting starting off by scouting out for things which are about to sort of take off but haven't really hit Amazon. Is that specifically one strategy, like Kickstarter as a place, for example?
Yeah, that's a big part of how we've been successful.
makes a lot of sense. So in other words, you're not being the first to market in the general sense of the internet marketplace, where I guess, or even generally retailing, but you want to be one of the first on Amazon to take that product seriously and you know, get the right quality and price, I guess. Is that a summary?
Absolutely. Because you take a look at these sites and they are the ones that they're basically getting you social proof. You know what I mean? That because you can see, oh, these people are backing it. These people are liking it. They're getting you a little bit of hype. And I'm not saying copy these products exact, because most of the time they're going to be patented or they'll have a patent pending. So you have to understand that it's not the core product. It's what can you do with that? Maybe you can make a peripheral of that new widget that they're about to put out. Have that peripheral on Amazon already, you know, for something that hasn't even made it to market yet.
That makes a lot of sense. Could you give us an example of that, just to make it a bit more easy to imagine for the listeners and the viewers?
Yeah, sure. So let's say you have a sports camera. So something that fits on your helmet or something like that. And you can see that they're making the new best one that is going to go underwater or something. Well, how do you attach it to you underwater? Well, maybe you need an armband that's waterproof or this or that, and it's stabilized or something like that. Get started on that. You know when they're going to release it. They tell you, hey, we're releasing it on this day. And they basically are giving you a whole bunch of information, plus the social proof to be able to go out there and do something about it.
Really smart. So if I'm going to summarize the things you're giving us, which I think are really valuable, especially in 2018, which more than ever, it's a crowded space at Amazon. So you're starting off Amazon, getting product ideas. I think that's really, really important. You're seeing some data which backs up your instinct that this thing is moving, that there's a growing trend that you're going to be backing. You are also leveraging the social proof on the basis of it. And then the fourth thing you're doing is then you're looking for easy wins, kind of piggyback marketing on the back of the product. So those are four very, very smart ideas. So, and even I think this piggyback marketing thing is a brilliant thing to remind me of. I can think, for example, that Apple is one of those stocks which famously is, you know, the highest market cap in the world. So has it reached its peak? It's hard to know. But there was one little company that produced chips or some kind of thing that went in Apple computers that apparently when, you know, people realized it had like a 400% increase in 1 year because it was connected to a massively rising trend, but was just less obvious. So that's a kind of tried and trusted strategy. So brilliant thinking. Now let's get back to the Amazon space. Presuming that you've got this brilliant idea, like let's roll with this concept, and it is only a concept at the moment, and I suppose that's how it is in real life when you're doing it, right? So you've got an idea of an armband to attach, which is waterproof, and you attach some form of GoPro underwater camera to it. What do you do next to kind of check whether this has got any sort of substance behind it?
So we have a software, it's called AZ Socializer. What I personally do is I go in there and we have a research element on that, and we'll check out the social pinpoints. I call them pinpoints, but you know, you can do the research, see where something comes up, look at who your actual customers are going to be and see what they're doing, you know, get sort of a sense of how they like to be talked to and sold to, and then you can start asking these people, the people who are actually going to buy it, you can start asking them the questions that you need to know. Once you get that, then you can start to bring that sort of into one sort of spot and do the pros and cons of the different things. You can right after that put your feelers out for manufacturers, see what they have to say about these things. Because a lot of times these Chinese manufacturers, they're already doing what I'm talking about, right? So they already have somewhat of a prototype and they're just looking for someone to sell it to. And if you are first in on that, you have the great privilege of being able to pretty much ask for whatever you want for those first initial orders. Your pricing can be quite a bit lower.
Interesting. So in the next stage, you're basically you're the first person who has some kind of Amazon based software that actually, well, I guess the fact that you have things outside the Amazon space, you actually is talking about once you get an idea, not just rushing to Amazon to confirm it, but actually you're going wider than Amazon and looking at social proof on social media, which is very, very interesting. And I think, again, that speaks to me, because otherwise you're just you and everybody else on Amazon doing the same damn thing, right? And then it's a price competition. And then the idea that the Chinese suppliers are kind of probably following the same trends and you can be the first to ask them for the real version of the thing. Again, that's very, very smart. So I guess the overwhelming message I'm getting for you is get ahead of the trend, but get some kind of get some data to show that it is a real trend, but it's not yet a trend on Amazon. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Look off Amazon before you move on to Amazon. Now that's for if you want to be a trendsetter. Now, if you want to go into a market where there are two or three different products in there, and I'm not saying you have to be that first person to market. Maybe there's five or six pages of this sort of stuff. That's where you would want to really dive into what they're doing on Amazon. So first, talking about, it's not on Amazon yet, but if it is on Amazon and it is something that you want to go for, you really want to get the most accurate data that you can, and don't use moment in time data. People who just check one ASIN or one keyword at a time for a day and say, oh yeah, this looks good, that is just a recipe for failure. You cannot do it that way. You need to be tracking for a week, at least 2 weeks, I would say. And so we have another software where that's basically what it does. Now this software, it's not generally for giving you product ideas. You know, there's a lot of other softwares out there where it's going to say, I want things between this BSR and this BSR, and they got to be blue and they've got to turn clockwise and stuff like that. And these are everything on Amazon that sells that looks like that. We don't do that. What we do is we give you a way, once you have an idea or something, to really justify whether it is going to be successful or not. And that's backed by, you know, sellers who are actually very successful on Amazon. So we give you advice. You know, maybe you don't have enough capital to get into that. And we also give you ways to choose where you are in your selling experience. Are you looking for low risk, but something that's going to give you a little bit of more capital that you can build off of? Or are you a multi-million dollar seller who's looking for high risk products? How do you know? Because one product that looks good is completely different from someone else who's at a much higher level. And a lot of these programs they don't separate that. They'll give you a green or five stars, but you don't know where you are in that, in your journey.
Yeah, I'm really, really, it's refreshing to hear you say that, because I think I can understand that if you're creating, for example, an Amazon course, why you would say, look, it's step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and it's modules 1 to 8, and then done. You present a promise that you're going to quit your day job in 6 months, which is the usual thing that people seem to come to me with, you know, for mentoring or the mastermind. I'm like, okay, well, that depends on multiple factors. So one of the reasons that I haven't, you know, had the cheek to create an Amazon course yet is that I'm not sure, you know, you'd have to create quite a complex course, because it's got to cater to people exactly like you said, with multiple different budgets and with different risk profiles. And then of course you've got the other facts in their life, like how much capital you've got is one thing, but if you need it to pay the rent for the next 6 months and you've got a newborn child, that's different from if you have no dependents and so forth. So really glad you're acknowledging that. Now, the other thing, that the software analyzing whether something is or is not an opportunity, again, that is such an important thing. So I'm really glad you're saying that. I think it's a long overdue conversation, really, because the generalized idea of one size fits all, I think, is just BS. And I'm glad to hear you calling that out. Now, I'd love to break down then, Reid, what your process is step by step. So if I start off with the sort of process that I've been doing, maybe we can sort of interrogate those, the different points. The first thing I generally want to see on Amazon is some kind of demand and some kind of demand depth, which would be like, you know, if it's less than $60,000 across page one, even if you're looking for a low risk, it's going to be a little bit hard to make money unless you've got a big market share. The second part is then how much market share does everyone else have on Amazon? And I would start from that point. Have you got any comments on the sort of demand side, what you'd look for and how you approach that?
Yeah, I would look for, if you are starting out and you're looking for a low risk product, I would, well, obviously, there's a lot of data that goes into the making that decision. And we don't, it's not, once again, one size fits all things. We don't say, oh, everything has to have less than 200 reviews and everything has to have this. Maybe it's only like one or two products on there that have over the 200 reviews, but the rest have none. Well, then you have to look at the data. How much is it just those top two that are really selling? And there's a ratio in there. And that ratio is very important, because the people, if they have a huge lead on you, they're going to slam so much marketing into it. You won't be able to keep up. And you need to be able to figure out what that ratio is and what a good ratio for you is as well. Because let's face it, no one starting out on Amazon right now is going to just put up a product, put on a little bit of PPC and hope to get to the top of page one, unless you're in a category that just isn't going to sell anything. So you have to realize that you are going to be putting probably three times your initial investment into the product to get it just going. You know, if you pay $2,000 for your product to ship it into Amazon and get it manufactured and stuff, you can expect to spend probably $6,000 just to get it to a space where it's going to start being profitable for you. You know, that's a generalized statement, but it's fairly accurate.
Yeah, it's good to have a rule of thumb as well. I mean, rules of thumb, I mean, I can see why people come up with a lot of criteria and sort of ready-made steps, because in a complex world, we need simplifications. But yeah, it's a good starting point. I think you're about right. I mean, a lot of people come to me with the idea they got £4,000 to spend on Amazon products. I'm like, well, as Will Chernin pointed out to me ages ago on the podcast, and as soon as he said it, I thought, yeah, he's articulated something I've experienced but hadn't put into words, which is, well, yeah, if you're going to order X amount of inventory and it sells, you're going to have to reorder it. No. When you're, you know, probably less than halfway through your current stock. So basically you've got a budget for two sets of inventory, and then nobody seems to take account of the fact that marketing is a real cost. So thank you for another reality check there. So let's take a real life example and walk me through. Imagine I'm coming to you and I want advice for, should I choose this product? So I've got £3,000 or say $4,000 US. I'm not sure what, how that translates into Canadian dollars, forgive my ignorance, but, $4,000 US. I have got a product. It's like a vitamin C serum. I'm looking in the USA. They're doing a, you know, $600,000, and I've no idea if these are the right figures. But I looked at the recent product, so the figures are about right. But it's for a different name product. Right. $600,000 US dollars for the whole of page one. About the top two competitive brands take about $300,000 of revenue between them. And there's quite a lot of reviews, but I can see some one or two people doing like $40,000 of revenue with only, you know, 40 reviews. So that looks quite a good ratio. What are your thoughts so far for the mythical person with $4,000 in their pocket?
I would take the average of page one and see what the revenues per month are, and you will need that much minimum to get started. That's a pretty easy number. If they're all making $40,000 and you're coming in with $4,000, then you will be stuck on page 100 for the rest of your selling career, because these people now have 10 times more money than you in revenue to stay on page one. So I would say that's a no-go.
Excellent. That's a really nice, clear answer and a very simple reason why. And okay, so say we've got the same guy. He's got $4,000 burning a hole in his pocket, or £3,000. Let's say he goes to the UK and has a look at the numbers. Now, I'm not always, but just to put my cards on the table, I think the UK is a really hard place to sell in right now, because there's a lot of American and for all I know, Canadian and Australian sellers in there, because it's English language, it's a straightforward place to move stuff to. UK has had the biggest adoption as a percentage of the population shopping online in the world. So although the numbers aren't as big as the US, but anyway, so I'm not advocating the UK, just to be clear on my position. But let's say this guy, he goes, okay, so the US is out of the question. He goes to the UK and he sees that the aggregate demand on page one for, so the revenue is around the sort of, let's say $60,000 mark. So it's about a tenth of the US, which is not unusual to see something like that roughly. Yeah. And let's say that, the sixth position on down the page for one of his main keywords, like say vitamin C serum, and we'll adjust the keywords question in a second.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's just one keyword, of course. But let's say the sixth position is doing about $4,000 equivalent, or about £3,000 a month in revenue, with about 20 reviews. What's your thinking about this situation?
With about 20 reviews.
Let's say the average rating across the page is looking about 3.5 to 4 stars, and these guys have got 4 stars, just in case that makes a difference, you're thinking.
Sure. Yeah, it does. And I think that that's getting a lot closer to where I would say it could possibly be a successful launch. Now, I would, for your first set, I would almost go to page 2 and look at those numbers, because, like you said, you're going to have to reorder halfway through. You'll be away. Typically, you'll probably be giving away some product as well, so you're going to take that as a hit. So you really want to position yourself where you can make a minimum, boy, net on that first. You'd want to do 30 to 35% net profit, and that's after taxes. That's a lot of. I think a lot of times people forget about all of these little things that eat into your margin, and it's constantly every day. Even just being a pro seller on Amazon eats into your margins as well, you know, and you have to account for all those little things. So once again, take your time before making any sort of decision, and do your due diligence, because it's a large, you know, you say it's burning a hole in their pocket, but it's a large investment for anyone. Truly it is. And so I would say that you're getting closer to the mark there, for the simple fact that at £6,000 per month, you would be able to profit £2,000, and that would get you your initial order into your manufacturer as soon as possible.
Okay, so let's take this scenario. Let's assume that this guy, you know, he looked into the details of it and can see that a lot of other people are selling despite some bad marketing of whatever kinds. And, you know, maybe they're just not explicitly explaining the benefits of this thing. They're just kind of being a bit generic. Whereas people who have arthritis find that it gives them joint pain relief, and he really hits that over the head. So he's got a better marketing angle. He's got some reasons to believe. Let's assume he goes ahead. What are the economics of this thing going to be? I mean, obviously it depends how much you can buy it for, and that's, you know, a whole different conversation, but let's try and walk ourselves through a sort of case study. I know it's not real. If you have a real case study, I'm happy to go through that. Obviously names and products may be changed, but how does the economics of this work?
So, okay. Yeah, I can go over something. So we'll try and hit all the different points. So starting out, your pro seller account, you are going to want to start with pro seller account. A lot of people say, hey, start with your free this or free that. That just go with your pro seller account off the get-go, because you have to set up for that. You have to get a bank account. You have to start an LLC. Up here in Canada, we call it a corporation, an Inc. company. I'm not sure what they call it in Britain, but that costs money. So you want that. These are things that are important that aren't always taken into account. And I'm talking about your first product. You know, if you have a few products already on the go, then this is all stuff that you'll take. You've already done. So you have that. Then you need to talk to your manufacturer. The manufacturer is going to put a price up that you can say, hey, look, I can get this for $1, but what they don't tell you is you have to pay for the insert. You have to pay for the box it goes in. You have to pay for, you know, some of the packing and stuff like that. And you also have to pay for it to get to you. I wouldn't advise anyone to do sea shipping on their first product until you get up to, boy, you'd have to be up around $50,000 a month to, I personally think, to justify that. It all depends on how big your product is. All how much it weighs and stuff. But, you know, when you first start out, you want to be able to resupply as fast as possible, because your cash flow is so low. Like you need to be able to pick up the phone to your manufacturer, and then a month down the line, a lot of times, you know, it takes them a month, it takes them 6 weeks to even get the thing manufactured before they can even ship it. So cash flow is king in this game. But so we've run into three different things here. typically what I would plan for in marketing, if you're just going to start out with sponsored ads on Amazon, is, now I don't use ACOS as a metric. I made up my own catchphrase. It's called AAOCS, or actual advertising cost of sale, ACOS. Sorry, I got that wrong. Your actual. So what we do is we'll take, because you'll have different campaigns, you'll have different things going, but you want to see what your actual cost per week, and you can do the last week. There's ways to get those metrics. You can see what you're spending total on your product as it compares to what your sales are. And you want to keep that around 10%. If you're getting higher than that, then you are in danger of slowing your cash flow down so much that you won't be able to reorder. That's not a huge problem in the fact that your first order, you're probably not going to get to page one, but all that time where you don't have that cash available and you don't have a product up there, it slowly eats at your ranking. You want to avoid that as much as possible.
Absolutely. Can I just pick up on one thing you just pointed out, which is, again, this is a metric I've been using for ages. I haven't even put a neat name on it, but your AACOS, as you call it, the actual Amazon cost of sales, is a metric I've been telling people to use for over a year privately. And for some reason, I've never got around to doing a podcast about it. So thank you for picking up on that. I mean, it's such an important, very simple, basic metric that anyone can add up very easily. As you say, you know, you just add up over a period of time what your revenue was, the same period what your ad spend was, and you can get that off Seller Central without doing anything more complicated than, you know, a calculator or a piece of paper. And brilliant idea to do that. I would say that because I guess I've been using that idea, but I really think that's robust. 10% is a really solid figure as well. So I just want to sort of highlight that for everyone listening as a really solid piece of advice. So coming back to the market side of things and linking up, you're talking through some really, really helpful economics, if you like. But what I want to do is try and link up come back to the idea of the decision that everyone has to make, especially first people, but not just when they're starting out, but for expansion reasons. When you look at the market data, what does that tell you about the economics of the product? Obviously, you don't have to go to the manufacturer to get profit and loss figures. I get that. But if you are looking at something that's selling, say, $3,000 worth of revenue a month on Amazon, you know, or say position six for a certain keyword is, then we've already talked about the rule of thumb about how much you need to spend to market it. Have you got any other sort of rules of thumb around the economics of particular market spaces and therefore whether you should or shouldn't go into them if you've got a certain budget, is what I'm trying to get at.
Okay. Well, yes. Yes, I do. I would say that what you are initially going in, the metric, and then once again, this is such a generalized statement, but if you have $6,000 to spend, then you probably want to stay in a field where the average sales gross per month of all of the products equals that. And that's a good rule of thumb. So if you have $6,000 and you want to get into that, you're going to want to find something that sells $6,000 per month.
Right. That's good. That's nice and clear.
Yeah. Now that changes with the different risks. That's the low risk. If you get up to high risk, then you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars just to get that sort of stuff in, and your cash flow on that is insane. You need to always be looking at what your cash flow is and what your in and out is, and a lot of times smarter people than me take care of that.
Yeah, it's certainly not a thing to do casually. I mean, I know people that we'll spend $40,000 just on marketing and I suppose the fulfillment of products for giveaways just to launch into a space, including probably Amazon ad spend. That is an inventory cost. That's on top of inventory costs. So, I mean, and those guys, I mean, one of them I know just had his first $1 million month. So it works for him, but you've got to have deep pockets. It is not for the faint hearted. So it could be bad news for people who think they're going to get rich in a year, but you know, for the rest of us, I think it's probably something we suspected already. So tell me a little bit more about competition analysis, because obviously the main thing on Amazon is dealing with the competition, because there is so much sale across the board, so much sales volume across the board on Amazon. Competition analysis is such an important thing in that space. Could you tell me what your view is on the number of reviews people have, the ratings, and what do you think are the other things that you think makes it hard to go into a space and compete, or easier and therefore more inviting?
Well, reviews, you know, reviews are reviews, and you need to take that into account. But we don't actually judge our products that much on reviews, for the simple fact that Amazon is making it so hard to get reviews now, and they're yanking reviews away from so many people at this point. Just this month or last month alone, they took away a whole bunch of different reviews. So they were called, now Amazon doesn't call them unverified reviews, but they're unverified reviews. And I'm sure that your listeners will know what that means. Amazon is phasing that out almost. They're almost to 100% at this point in time. And they phased it out on products coming to market. They're also phasing it out. They're probably 60% into previous listings as well. And you're going to see a huge shift in how many reviews these people actually have. So on that, for the next couple months, if we're talking the next couple months, I would not use that as a major metric, because that's going to change all the time. I would like to say, though, that I do not like the idea of looking at, let's say, one ASIN or two ASINs on the first page to make your decisions, because it's important to know what the entire niche is doing. Even one keywords full of information really isn't enough. And I think that you need, at a minimum, five keywords, main keywords that people are actually buying for, to know what the entire market is doing, that niche in general is doing. And I would also say that using the magic BSR number probably isn't a great way to judge what your sales are going to be either. That is notorious, and it changes every 15 minutes. Now our program, we do use BSR for moment in time, right? So if you want to just get that quick look into things, then that we have to use it. But once you start tracking, the software is super smart. It's got artificial intelligence where it starts taking 999 numbers, and you can't get that from every product, but the ones they drag the 999. And I don't know if your listeners know about that shortcut, but basically it's a way to let you know exactly what a seller is selling on a daily, day-to-day basis. And what we do is we match those up, and the software slowly matches it up so that we're getting as close with the BSR to what people are actually selling as possible. But you need to do that over time, you know. A lot of this stuff takes time to work. So accurate numbers, always get accurate numbers. If you're not getting accurate data, then you're kind of at a loss to start with. And I guess secondly, BSR, because I know, I'm sure you were going to ask me about that metric. You got to take that with a real large grain of salt. You have to be careful about that, because it'll change 10,000 BSR every 15 minutes. You know, if you're not selling something, then, oh, you know, throughout the day, it's always working. And if you're using those moment in time checks to base your sales on, then you're sort of at a loss.
Excellent. Well, so I think you picked up on a few very important points. First of all, BSR is a snapshot, which is fine. But yeah, you got to base things over time. And I like the fact that your software sounds like it's got a sophisticated machine. So there's certainly something that I'm going to be personally checking out, whether or not anyone else listening is interested or not. If they've got a brain, they certainly should be considering it, because I'm always looking for tools not to substitute for the old necktop computer, but to help me get solid data to verify my intuition and my imagination, which I think are also, as you've touched on already, very important things, a sense of where someone's going. But also, I really like the fact that you're finally, you know, nailing down the fact that you can't really assess a niche in the general sense of a sort of demand, a marketplace of people with a need or a pain. just from one keyword, never mind from one ASIN. And I like the fact that, yeah, you're right. It's probably about 4, 5, 6 keywords that my friends who are doing really big numbers would all generally agree on the fact that you need 4, 5, 6 main money keywords that your listing ends up to optimize for, even if you don't know what those are to start with. So how do you deal with that thing? Because that's very hard to get a grasp of how to measure that.
So once again, sorry, I'm going to have to go back to the software again. I'm not trying to push the software. I just, you know, this is what we do. This is how we've become successful. What we do is you're allowed to track 5 different keywords, and then we have a proprietary technique that we call it the spider web, and it slams all 5 of those keywords together, and then you have a whole different set of metrics on what is going to be successful. So you go from your moment in time to your keyword tracking, which you'll want to see if those are successful, maybe get 5 or 6 of those, and then you want to slam them together into the spider web and see how the entire niche is doing, because it's important to know how that is moving along. Man, if we had this software out here when fidget spinners were picking up, I think a lot of people would have saved a lot of money, because we were showing fidget spinners as, whoa, stay away, you know. And a lot of people made a lot of money, and then a lot of people lost their shirts.
Yeah.
You just can't see that whole market.
Yeah, I mean, fidget spinners is like a classic kind of Amazon trend, right? I mean, yeah. My business partner and I, you know, considered it at some point, because you kind of couldn't avoid having a conversation about it, a bit like Bitcoin in the wider world right now, and right. Or, you know, cryptocurrency generally. And we looked at it and we said, you know what, I guess that ship has probably sailed. It's kind of obvious that what goes up must come down. And sure enough, you know, you couldn't exactly predict how it was going to go wrong. You know, but Amazon was their next thing. They're seizing shipments at customs before they get into Germany, you know, and so got ugly fast. So as you say, a lot of this game is not so much about finding the winners, which is obviously important, but as you implied from the beginning, risk reduction and, you know, eliminating stupid moves, or at least reducing them. And I guess your background with the oil industry and, you know, the risk aversion that you should hopefully have when you're dealing with flammable liquids and also your personal experience of losing a lot of money, I guess, have combined to give you that reality check that a lot of people just kind of seem to bypass.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? I'm going to give you another example here. So this just came out, and it was a product that I had started out with. It's kinesiology tape. And so it looks good on paper, and it did. We're talking back in 2015, though. Everything looked good back in 2015. Things have changed. But someone going into kinesiology tape right now would look at it, and the numbers would still look fairly well. Even if you're, like, you would have to be a medium risk. You know, I talk about different risk profiles, but you would be a medium risk. You wouldn't be a low risk getting into that. But anyone doing their social homework would see that two of the major players in this industry just got slapped with a class action lawsuit. So, you know, oh, numbers look good now, but if you just saw that one advertise or that one article or that group of articles, you'd know, whoa, something's happening here in this industry, and I better stay away from that. And it's small little social triggers like that I think not a lot of sellers are in tune with, and you really have to look at the niches as a whole, and that's why a lot of times going off of Amazon is very important.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. Again, really healthy and important reminder, because so many people on Amazon, they want to get selling on Amazon. All they look at is Amazon data. And I think, as you said, that gives you kind of tunnel blindness that is extremely dangerous. And I think it's very, very important that you've picked up on that. Fortunately, I know that we're going to be covering in another episode the whole question, which you touched on already, of social media and email marketing, so getting off Amazon and how that integrates with Amazon. So I look forward to exploring that with you in the next episode.
Thank you.